Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. In-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation. And by Ting.com. Ting is a mobile phone service that makes sense. Save money with Ting. Pay only for what you use. Ting doesn't require a contract and offers unlimited devices on one shared plan. To save $25 on your first Ting device, visit hamnation.ting.com. That's hamnation.ting.com. And by ICOM. For more information, visit icomamerica.com/hamnation. This is Ham Nation, episode number 132, recorded January 29th, 2014. Ham Nation visits Quartz Fest. Hey, good evening, everybody. It is Ham Nation time. No, I'm not Bob Heil. I don't pretend to be. I don't even play him on the radio, but it is Don at E5DW. Bob is, I think, still out towards the NAMM show. I'm not sure, but he's out and about tonight, and so we've got the rest of the normal cast of idiots around here. We've got George up in Jackson, W5JDX. How are you tonight, my friend?
Hi, Don. I'm doing pretty well tonight. It is still a little cold here. You know, we had a big snow here yesterday, about half an inch. So we've survived it. It finally quit, but it has been cold for this part of the country this year, that's for sure.
Yeah, back out to the West Coast where it is considerably warmer and nicer, I'm sure, to Costa Mesa and Gordon West. WB6NOA, how are you tonight, West Coast Gordon?
We are okay. In fact, Bob and Sarah came by just to say that they finished the NAMM show with great honors of four different groups using the Heil microphones. They were all smiles, and we'll see some of the activity shortly on Short Shots coming up in a balmy Costa Mesa, 62 degrees.
Wow, sounds nice. 28 here, probably a little bit cooler up where George is. And but you know, the good news is we're not in Atlanta. My God, did you see the news video from Atlanta and Birmingham, Alabama? Holy man, just so glad we're not down here. But you know, a lot of other people, wintertime is a lot worse. Of course, up north, we've got Dan Van Evenhoven up in Wisconsin coming up a little bit later on for Dale, and it's considerably colder up there. We're just not built to handle the cold in the south. We're really, really good with tropical weather. We throw a hell of a hurricane party. And in fact, there's a local kind of an internet sensation, a local weather lady from down in Cajun country. Her name is Rhonda Fay. And let me let you know kind of what she does as far as for tropical weather. Brian, let's run that.
The Fay reporting live from the Matthews, Louisiana Walmart. As you can see, the shelves behind me, clear of Vienna sausage. I'm glad all of you took my advice. Now, I got another little piece of advice for you, my friends. This is just a tropical storm, and I am all for preparing, but people are going a little bit crazy in Walmart. The winds are said to be 50 miles an hour. You go faster than that on the 4-lane on the way to home. So you don't need to be so panicky, okay? Stay safe. I'll do another update when I see fit. Rhonda Fay out.
Now, Rhonda has branched out a little bit. She's covered the polar vortex, and let's see what Rhonda has to say about wintertime weather.
This is Rhonda Fay reporting live from Raceland, Louisiana. As the temperature drops, we have more chance of ice on our driveways and on our house. And if you don't have a snow shovel, you can always just use an oar like this. I'll do another update when I can feel my hands. Rhonda Fay out.
She is quite the sensation down here. And if you don't place that accent, that's kind of a Cajun accent. She lives down in South Louisiana. And yeah, you got to have a boat oar because, you know, you got to paddle your pirogue. And of course, you know, when you have a crawfish boil, that's really, really good for stirring the boiling pot. And now we know it's also good for knocking icicles off of your house. That's thanks, Rhonda. That's good stuff. So that's kind of what we've been going through down here. We had a little bit of sleet, and that was about it. But we're going to head back out towards sunny Los Angeles now, or Costa Mesa. And see what Gordon has got going with his short shots. My guess is there's probably no sleet in these short shots, Gordon.
Well, we've got some good ones here. So, Brian, let's head back to the Consumer Electronics Show for those things that hams found out at Quartz Fest, Arizona. 6,000 watts, just your minor inverter, 6,000 watts. Oh, these were the hit at the CES show. These were the 4 as well as 6 propeller helicopters. They were flying everywhere at CES, and shortly you'll see at Quartz Fest. Yeah, they were the rage. And they're all radio controlled on Wi-Fi frequencies as well as 900 megs. And they go up to 1,000 feet, although I understand you can't go over 300 feet legally. But quite the rage. Look at this. That'll even take up your big Nikon camera, Don, and take some great shots, which we did, thanks to Neil at Quartz Fest. And look at this. This is robotics as well as 3D printing. And Bob Heil last night and Sarah said they're going to have some of their molds 3D printed. And wow, the things that you can now do with your 3D printer, huh? Pretty neat. Good deals, even in colors as well. So maybe we'll see some Heil microphones in shocking pink or orange. All this 3D printers. Uniden now has an amplifier. So, Bob, we got an amplifier for your cell phone system out there at your remote house. Now Sarah can stay in touch via the big Uniden cell phone booster. We saw some things at CES that, well, we just couldn't quite believe. How about a jump starter this size to start your big diesel engine? I don't think so. And other things, you can't go to CES with dull teeth. So at the Consumer Electronics Show, folks were getting a little high-tech treatment to brighten their smile. Oh, this was great. I love this. You buy this like $30 case, maybe $20. You slip your phone in it, and it will boost it 3 and 6 and maybe even 9 decibels, but they couldn't really demonstrate it in the booth. I'm not sure that it's really going to be a phone booster. And we were amazed that those coming in from overseas, whenever they wanted to sleep, they just went to sleep, and they were actually more rested by getting cat naps at the show than we were. Hey, look at this. Check and charge your devices with heat. Yeah, first you do the heat just to charge your phone. I don't know. The things we saw at the CES show, what was really good was little teeny shortwave radios. This one from Eaton. But the real king of shortwave radios comes from this man. Yes, sirree. C.C. Crane. And look what he is holding up. Bob Crane has got his new little Skywave radio. He looks pretty happy because everybody was coming by to take a look. The C. Crane EP. This radio won at the Quartz Fest radio shootout a few days ago for best long wave reception, actually medium wave. So the C. Crane receivers, and this is the big boy. And there, Bob Crane is quite happy. They've made all sorts of modifications to this good old standard, and it still continues to be quite a radio. And for those of you that enjoy Wi-Fi radio, they've got a new one as well, and we saw that at the CES show. So neat stuff from C. Crane. Here you go, Don. This will get you out of that icy driveway. You too, George. The new Toyota iRoad vehicle. And they weren't offering demonstration rides, so pretty cool. Hey, everybody, soon you'll have glass displays that will be heads up, so you don't even have to look down at your ham radio to see what frequency you're on. And look at this, good old TVs. But these were digital television antennas. Probably wouldn't work analog, but they work great for digital. And I was sort of happy to see them, that they had all the elements rather than a little low-noise preamplifier. Well, what do you say we head to the desert? We've got our off-road gear on, and we're headed for Quartz Fest 14. Brian, and go ahead and roll it. Quartz Fest 14 is now about 15 years old, and everybody had their Quartz Fest T-shirts. Here was a look at our communication vehicles spread all over the desert floor at Quartz Fest 14. First order of business was Bureau of Land Management and Search and Rescue telling us that, hey, the land is yours for 14 days. Just be sure and take out everything you bring in and have fun. First thing to set up was the base station, and this was our special event station, W7Q. And we had the big ICOM 9100, and we had an Elecraft there. And, boy, they played well off of that great antenna that you see up there. And we had all sorts of folks saying, come on, I want to play radio. And, of course, we were solar-powered, a lot of solar at Quartz Fest because there is nothing else but solar to keep your batteries charged. So the big demonstration station that you see in the background there, powered by solar. Thanks, Ward, for bringing all of that solar panel gear there. And there's our Elecraft team that presented some Elecraft demos. The ICOM team was there, and we presented ICOM demos, and both radios did a fabulous job of getting a signal out at Quartz Fest. And that's Good Sam Radio Ham's Dick operating on the big ICOM 9100, making all sorts of contacts from W7Q Quartz Fest. And that was a great station. All right, time to get the old comm band set up. I store all of my antenna masts down there in the lower chamber, and they go up in about 10 minutes, and there we are with our 40-meter dipole. And, of course, that's the pink pig at the top of the Quartz Fest Gordo Van antenna setup, and we made all sorts of contacts on 40. And it was fun. And the winner, though, of the antenna comparison was this little teeny trailer setup. He had a great signal, and he actually had the best signal with 100 watts, as judged by California rescue stations up the coast. And that little scamp machine put out a great signal, and the antenna was a simple dipole, off-center-fed dipole. And that's Neil, W6FOG. Neil is getting ready to light off that helicopter and send it aloft. And again, there's that little solar panel doing its thing. He had a big crowd wanting to learn more about the quad helicopters. And he's quite an expert on it. We had seminars, everything to do with solar arrays to phased arrays. And the seminars were in three different seminar rings, and they went all day and all afternoon long. And the seminars also drew in the American Radio Relay League, who on Friday gave some great presentations to standing room, well, maybe sitting room only. But before we sat down for the ARRL, we had to go and get some rock hunting. And here we are on the Frank's off-road adventure tour that took us all over the place, including the gold mines. And it was quite a ride. And we had 50 off-road vehicles that made the trip. Took about 6 hours, and we had a great time out there in the Quartz Fest Mountains. And what we were looking for, of course, was gold. We found a lot of other rocks other than gold. The quartz that you see right here, we brought home. I hope it's okay to bring them home. But if you're coming to Quartz Fest next year, it's rock heaven. And here are the off-road hams that are exploring some of the rocks down in a ravine. So lots of excitement at Quartz Fest. And of course, we had the pet parade. And here's Dick getting ready. He's got a little pooch there for the pet parade, part of our ham radio events at Quartz Fest. And we also had Tai Chi. And there we are, all exercising in the morning. That was our early morning PT call. And every day, we grew more and more Tai Chi folks out there working up for a good breakfast. There's Dick Norton, and that's Chris, KR1SS on the lift. Dick with the American Radio Relay League and section manager also for Arizona on his right. And we had a great ARRL talk. And Angel on the, or excuse me, not Angel. Angel was not with us this time, but Chris, KR1SS, without Angel this year, she put a great job of putting this whole event together. Thanks, Chris. Ham radio exams, absolutely. Take a test out in the desert sun. Wasn't really that hard. There's our beauty contest for the bark off. And the pet parade drew about 30 applicants, more than we had prizes for. And these four-legged applicants were dressed to the hilt. Everything was live, including live soldering. Of course, we needed that 6,000-watt inverter to bring up that 110 iron to a boil. And here we are soldering some components and an expert showing how to put those together. And the whole thing was on amateur television. So if you didn't want to leave the cozy cool van, you could just turn it on ATV. And thanks to the San Bernardino Microwave Society team for providing one of their members showing us amateur television. And that's Chris getting ready to give away some prizes in the afternoon. Lots of kits, a lot of experts showing us how to put things together. And continuously drew a big crowd. And there is Jody and Tracy with the Emergency Communications Service out of San Bernardino for one of the many food fests. They look pretty happy, huh? Yeah, they enjoyed that great food that we have here. There's Chris. She's smiling away because she put this whole thing together, and her team did a fabulous job this year for Quartz Fest. And, of course, there's Russ, KB6YAF. Quite the guitarist, and we had a great sing-along, and they'll always remember Row, Row, Row Your Boat, and If I Had a Hammer, Russ, a great job of putting that together. And it was just nonstop music. Everybody loves to play instruments, and we had them there for Quartz Fest. And here's another shot of our fire ring number three. We had three different presentation points, and each one was well-packed with exhibitors. We had 550 wanting to come together for Quartz Fest. And when it got dark, the fires came up, thanks to Neil again, W6FOG. And along with the fires, that's Neil. He looks pretty happy because we had all of the he had all of his TV gear, thanks to Ward, that would play movies on the side of an RV. And if you look real carefully, that's the famous Chip doing K7JA, doing his Jay Leno show. And that's where he was demonstrating CW as faster than texting via cell phone. And we had great movies every single night at Quartz Fest. And of course, every single evening, no rain, just great sunsets. Well, after Quartz Fest, a group of us went up to the military at 29 Palms. And hey, today, that's Don Arnold, W6GPS. Don is the one that brought in the Outbacker antenna to the United States. And for years, Don was the man that supported Outbacker. Now he's the AVMAP guy. And now, today, he is leaving the Air Force. So congratulations on retiring from the Air Force after many, many years. Good job, W6GPS. Hopefully that he's watching today. Well, we were escorted via a U.S. Marine veteran. And here we are inside one of the vehicles that jams cell phones that detonates mines in front of these vehicles, and he's giving us a little tour of one of the vehicles. By the looks of it, looks like it got detonated, but everybody survived. The class that we held at 29 Palms had plenty of demo gear, and the men and women in the service really interested to see that. That's Tracy with his super loop, and I'm looking on. Tracy was able to hear signals with that loop on HF that we could barely make out with a vertical antenna. So good job, Tracy. And here we are. That's the Blazing Pickle. And, of course, we had our 29 Palms military firemen on duty. So we thought, what the heck, let them blow up a pickle or two to demonstrate what Ohm's Law is all about. And then we had pet tracking on the 222 megahertz band with Spence Porter's great pet tracking gear. And there's Marilyn's little pooch. And yep, we found him. Luckily in time, because there was a coyote licking his chops just a few hundred yards away. So we are able to score a find on her Fritz. I think that's right. Fritz, the dog. And we were able to bring him back safe and sound thanks to the 222 megahertz chapter. And here we are roasting a few marshmallows at the end of a day. And those that were at Quartz Fest that came up and joined us, I didn't realize this, had put marshmallows on some of our antennas. And as we rode down the road, they were glowing away. But we had a great time. And notice a little bit of humor next to me on the left, on my left, one of the officers or enlisted men dressed the part for the great 29 Palms ham radio class. Thanks to the San Bernardino ECS and all of the other great team members that made it happen. So that's my short shots all about the desert. And we had a great time. We talked to lots of folks, including members of the off-road hams when we were out there at Quartz Fest. So we hope all of you will head to the hills or head to the sand or maybe the snow and have a great time this upcoming Super Bowl weekend. Don, back to you.
Man, I dig your hat. I'm going to drive my Jeep to work tomorrow. I'm actually getting to go to work tomorrow. I'm going to drive my Jeep and exercise that little ICOM 7000, maybe do some HF Jeeping. Hey, I love the Quartz Fest shots, and I love the CES shots too. And especially I liked the helicopters that you the multi-rotors that you take the cameras up. In fact, K3LR has some video of his contest station shot from one of those camera platforms, and really, really cool. Of course, K3LR is the big honcho over at DX Engineering, and they're one of our sponsors here at Ham Nation. You know, an often overlooked yet very critically important part of any antenna system is the transition from the transmission line to your balanced antenna. In other words, you're going to need a balun, and there's science behind baluns. It can be a little confusing, you know, without getting into a long-winded discussion on what they are and how they work. Let's just assume that you've already decided that you need one, and chances are you do. And that's why a ComTech balun from DX Engineering is a brilliant choice for some serious operating. See, ComTech studied Jerry Sevick's research on baluns and ununs and as an inspiration to create a line of baluns that are just the best out there. They offer the perfect combination of value, ruggedness, and performance. They build on a legacy of designs with 21st century components and improvements, provide a superb match between unbalanced coax and balanced antennas. Low impact on power performance either, a negligible 0.2 of a dB insertion loss. And the ComTech balans offer superior SWR across all the HF bands, superior common mode impedance across the HF spectrum, and isolation where you need it most. And the ComTech balans love being outside. They're sealed in a weatherproof box. They use stainless steel hardware. Gasketed SO239 connections improve the durability. They are built to withstand years of anything that Mother Nature can hand out, whether it's sun, cold, hurricanes, anything. Well-suited for all HF applications. They're available in 1-to-1 and 4-to-1 ratios with a single or dual cores. And depending on the application, they'll handle legal limit with a huge safety factor, too. The proper balance selection can be a little complicated. So that's why you need to call DX Engineering and get the advice you need. The right balance is crucial to maximizing your signal performance. Visit dxengineering.com and you can check out the entire selection. Do you need a crimper? Well, check out DX Engineering's Ultra Grip Crimp Tool. It is the best on the market for making secure and reliable crimp connections with coax and DC wiring with Anderson power poles. It's available as a kit with all the dies you need. You can also get the tool and dies separately for your specific applications. If you want to grab any of this gear, you get your order in by 10 p.m. tonight, Eastern Time. If it's in stock, DX Engineering will throw that stuff on a truck and it'll be headed your way tonight, weather permitting, of course. Got some snow around, but proven products, expert advice, the fastest shipping in the industry. It's DX Engineering, and they are helping you shrink the globe big time. Get a catalog. Shop online 24/7 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. dxengineering.com/hamnation. And thank you, DX Engineering, for your support of Ham Nation. We do appreciate you. Some awfully quality stuff. Now, speaking of snow, you know, it's snowing up towards Kansas. And, in fact, Dale is not with us tonight, but we have Dan Van Evenhoven. He is up in Wisconsin with Show Me Your Shack. He's sitting in tonight for Dale. So, Dan, go ahead and take it away, my friend.
Well, good evening. And we've got just one video tonight, which is a video that I did several months back. We've been kind of waiting for a time where we could kind of squeeze this one in because it's a little long. It's 7 minutes long. And it basically is Propagation 101. And let's go ahead and look at that video now.
Video I've titled Radio Propagation 101. It will give you a basic understanding of radio propagation. As ham radio operators, we've all seen propagation reports like this. But what do they really mean? High-frequency radio propagation depends on many factors. To begin to understand it, we need to know about the ionosphere and how current solar conditions affect it. The sun not only makes life possible on Earth, it makes long-distance radio propagation possible too. Solar radiation does interesting things to the upper regions of the atmosphere. Dark regions on the solar surface, or sunspots, are responsible for increased magnetic radiation from the sun. This radiation is what gives the ionosphere its ions, which refracts certain radio waves and absorbs others. Sunspots can vary from day to day, but they also tend to follow an 11-year cycle of activity. During peaks in the sunspot number, even very low-power stations can often be heard around the world. Sunspot numbers can also vary on a 27-day cycle due to the rotation of the sun. Of course, the tilting of the Earth on its axis affects propagation too, as well as the time of day. As a very general rule of thumb, frequencies above 10 MHz are useful during the day and below that are good at night. Predicting the actual usable frequency is an art and a science and depends on many factors. Another thing that affects propagation are solar flares, which eject massive amounts of potential and electromagnetic energy over a very wide spectrum. Flares occur near sunspots and often last only a minute or two. Flares are classified by the amount of X-rays that they produce. The biggest flares are X-class flares. M-class flares have a tenth of the energy of an X-class flare, and C-class flares have a tenth of the energy of an M-class flare. Though often short in duration, the effects they have on the ionosphere and radio communications can last for days. The ionosphere refracts radio waves of specific frequencies, primarily high frequencies, 3 to 30 megahertz. It is this refraction of radio energy that makes worldwide radio communications possible without the aid of a satellite. There are three basic layers in the ionosphere. The D layer is responsible for absorbing radio frequencies, not refracting. The more the D layer is ionized, the more it absorbs radio energy. Frequencies above 10 MHz are not readily absorbed by the D layer, but lower bands are usually unusable for long-distance communications during the daytime, thanks to the D layer. Like the D layer, the E layer dissipates its energy quickly when the sun is not shining, and therefore is only a major factor during the day. However, unlike the D layer, which absorbs the lower HF spectrum and lets higher frequencies pass through it, the E layer can refract radio signals, cause them to skip back to Earth. At night, when the E layer is very weak, radio signals tend to pass right through it. F1 and F2 are jointly called the F region. In fact, they combine into one F layer at night. The F region is the most important for long-distance HF radio communications. It retains its ions longer than any other layer and remains ionized all night, although not as densely. Its intense daytime ionization refracts high frequencies, but at night will often let them pass through. Low frequencies below 10 to 15 megahertz are refracted back to Earth at night. At night, the D layer disappears and the E layer becomes very weak since it can't stay ionized very long. Also, F1 and F2 combine to create a single layer. Low frequencies are now useful since the D layer is no longer there to absorb them. This is why you hear AM radio stations from all over the country at night. The same higher frequencies that are useful during the day may pass right through these less strong night side F regions. The highest frequency that will be refracted by the F region is the maximum usable frequency. It is often a good idea to use a wavelength close to the maximum usable frequency, but lower frequencies may be more prone to absorption and get degraded. Sometimes the maximum usable frequency drops below 5 MHz, or so due to the disturbance or weakened F region. Solar flares can cause such disturbances. Low points on the sunspot cycle don't help either. Current conditions in the atmosphere will greatly affect how radio signals of different frequencies will propagate. Sunspots help increase the atmosphere's ability to refract HF radio waves, while flares can cause disturbances in the ionosphere, known as geometric storms. A disturbance in the ionosphere will do more to absorb HF radio signals than propagate them. Higher sunspot numbers indicate increased ionizing radiation from the sun, which enhances the ionosphere's ability to refract HF signals. The sunspot number can vary from 0 to over 200 during the peak of the 11-year solar cycle. Similar to the sunspot number, the solar flux value is actually a measurement of radio signal from the sun. This index, taken once a day at a frequency of 2800 megahertz, increased radio noise from the sun means more ionizing radiation and correlates with the sunspot number. Solar flux values range from 60 to 300. The K index is a code that relates to the maximum fluctuation of horizontal components observed on a magnetometer relative to a quiet day during a 3-hour interval. The conversion table for maximum fluctuation, K-index, varies from observatory to observatory in such a way that the historical rate of occurrence of certain levels of K are about the same at all observatories. In practice, this means that observatories at higher geomagnetic latitudes require higher levels of fluctuation for a given K-index. There is a relationship between K and A. The A index was invented because there was a need to derive some kind of daily average level of geomagnetic activity. Because of the nonlinear relationship of the K scale to magnetometer fluctuation, it is not meaningful to take an average of a set of K indexes. What is done instead is to convert each K back into a linear scale called an equivalent hourly range A index. The daily A index is merely an average of 8 A indexes. Now here's some math. If we take the K indexes for the day, the daily A index is the average of the equivalent amplitudes. For example, 3 is equal to 15, 4 is equal to 27, 6 is equal to 80, 5 is equal to 48, and so on. So we take these numbers and we add them together. Divide by 8, we end up with 25.25, which gives us our A index for the day. Now that you have a basic understanding of how space weather works, the website I like to go to is Space Weather Prediction Center at www.swpc.noaa.gov. Good DXing. And 73s from N9LVS.
Oh, that was great.
Thank you. That's one of the number one questions I get asked of people that become generals. Is what's all this propagation stuff mean? And I've been teaching it for a while, and I thought maybe a video of it would probably be a pretty good idea, especially for those people that have gone from technician to general and look at the, you know, they say the propagation forecast and that. And it doesn't really, when you take the test and that, it doesn't really go into it real in depth. And this doesn't go into it real in depth either, but gives you a general understanding of what they're talking about. So that's why we made that little video. And another little teaching thing here, the website of the week is aa9pw.com.
oh yeah.
Which is a great website. I think Gordo will agree with me on there.
Oh yeah.
Love these guys. Love aa9pw.
yeah, he Simon is very good. The thing I like about his tests, I'm a volunteer examiner myself. The thing I like about his practice tests is they are the exact format that we give the test in. I mean, it's so many out of this section, so many out of this section. It's exactly like you're going to see it. Brian, if you go up to the top there, upper left-hand corner, it'll actually say take an exam, and you can click on that, and it'll show you exactly what the exam will look like. When you take it, and then when you're done taking the exam, then it'll score it at the end and tell you what percentage you got in what area. Excellent site, excellent website. Well, that's all here from cold country. We were minus 24 on Monday, wow. But it is warmed up. We actually went positive today with 1 degree, so it's warming up. I'm ready to get out the water skis. Back
great
to you,
work,
Don.
Dan.
Better you than me. Better you than me. Great stuff, Dan. Appreciate that. Yeah, the solar flux stuff is complicated for sure. But you've gotten me interested in learning more about that, and that's a good thing. So yeah, everyone needs to know more about that. Let's get into some of that video
as simple as I could. It is complicated, but it's you know, when you laid it out, you know, I spent quite a bit of time laying it out to make it as simple as possible.
Yeah, we appreciate it. Good stuff, Dan. Thanks a lot for being here. Let's go ahead and get into the news of the week now from Amateur Radio Newsline. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 1902, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, January 29th, 2014. A new record for VHF DXing from South Africa.
December saw a landmark for South African VHF DXing when Pine Pinar ZS6 Oscar Bravo applied for the DXCC award using only contacts made in the 2-meter band. With this, Pine became the first amateur in Africa and only the second in the Southern Hemisphere to achieve this feat. DXCC is issued by the American Radio Relay League for proven contact with at least 100 entities. Pine used the digital modes with a 4 Yagi station. He has been working on his DXCC for a full decade. His single band award brings the number of bands on which South Africans have earned DXCC now to 11. For the Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm David Conradi, Zulu Romeo 6 Delta Hotel Charlie.
As you can see from those images, Pine is very active in EME or moon bounce. Our congratulations to ZS6OB on this truly difficult achievement. The Radio Society of Great Britain has published new band plans for all United Kingdom amateur allocations from 136 kHz to 250 GHz. Copies of the band plan pages can be freely downloaded from the operating section of the RSGB website at www.rsgb.org, and you do not have to be an RSGB member to access these files. The same information can also be found in printed form in the February edition of the RSGB monthly magazine, Radcom. The Canadian newspaper, The Camrose, has run an article describing how amateur radio's unique communications expertise can make all the difference in times of emergency. Here's Jim Dameron in 8TMW.
The article quotes Rose City Amateur Radio Club Vice President Gary Horn, the E6GD. He says one of the things hams do is keep an emergency radio in the county office, so if they're called on for emergency communications, they have a base station already set up. He also notes that the city has ham radio operators' names should they need any help. The article says that amateur radio operators are often called on to assist in the coordination of emergency services during disasters like the Pine Lake tornado, the floods in southern Alberta, or the Slave Lake fire.
You can find a link to the article in the printed edition of this week's Amateur Radio Newsline report. And more good news for our neighbors to the north. Canadian hams now have permanent use of the 60-meter band. Bill Pasternak, WA6ITF, has more.
On January 22nd, Canadian regulator Industry Canada released a decision that will allow that nation's ham radio community the permanent use of 5 spot frequencies in the 60-meter or 5 megahertz band. The new grant in Canada is the result of an official Industry Canada consultation held in the summer of 2012. The frequencies designated are 5.332, 5.348, 5.358.5, 5.373, and 5.405 megahertz. Canadian hams can use them on a non-interference, non-protection basis. The maximum bandwidth is 2.8 kilohertz at 100 watts peak envelope power.
And finally this week, the ARRL has released a preview of its new 100th anniversary video, aptly titled The ARRL at 100, A Century of Amateur Radio. The 25-minute video plays out as a timeline in the history of the league from its earliest days right up to the present. Along the way, you'll learn some interesting facts that few know about. This includes the methods used by ARRL founders Hiram Percy Maxim, 1AW, and Clarence Tuska, 1WD, to ensure the survival of ham radio after World War I, when the Navy Department decided to hold on to control of all radio following the end of hostilities. That little tidbit alone makes this video well worth viewing. You can view it on the web or order DVDs suitable for club viewing. Just visit www.arrl.org for everything you need to know. And while you're there, check out the ARRL Centennial QSO Party going on all year long. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news, brought to you each and every week for over 35 years and counting at www.arnewsline.org. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 73. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. And that's what's going on in the world of ham radio. You know, not all, of course, not all communications is done via ham radio, of course. You know, a lot of people have cell phones these days. In fact, almost everyone has a cell phone. There are some people who don't even have home phones. They just have cell phones. And that can be a huge chunk of your monthly income. But I want to tell you about Ting. Ting is a mobile phone service. They're actually an MVNO. That's fancy schmancy talk for they're a reseller of the nationwide Sprint network. They're different. For instance, they have no contracts or no early termination fees. None of that. Also, they have an early termination fee relief program. If you're paying an early termination fee to come to Ting, they will help you. They will give you credit for 25% of your ETF up to $75 per device. All you do is purchase your device through Ting, port your number, submit your final bill with your ETF detail from your previous carrier. Ting.com/ETF has all the information on that. The other guys charge you if you go over your allocated minutes, text, or data. Well, with Ting, if you have a heavier month, you just pay for what you use. It's simple. And on the voicemail, caller ID, tethering, hotspot, three-way calling, call forwarding, and other features are all part of the service. There are no add-on charges with Ting. And there's no strange, mumbly, gumbly, gook stuff on your bill either. No line items. Ting charges you for what you use, plus whatever taxes they are legally required to collect. There are no hidden charges, no recovery fees, no other BS on your bill. And you can have unlimited devices on one plan, which means it's perfect for your company. Have as many devices as you want on one plan, sharing your pooled minutes, messages, and megabytes. Each device on the plan costs a flat $6 per month. And there is an amazingly powerful online account control panel. You take total control of your account, your usage, and your bills with the online control panel. And if you need to talk to someone, they're literally a actual human being is on the other end of 1-855-TING-FTW. Anytime between 8 a.m. and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, a real live, actual, honest-to-God person will pick up the phone and say, "Hi, thanks for calling Ting. I want to help you. How can I do that?" And if you want to do that online, you can do that as well. Help.ting.com has active customer forums, a simple and powerful help ticketing system, video tutorials, video startup guides, and a whole lot more. Here's how it works. You purchase your mobile device from Ting. You'll get that in 2 to 5 business days. Or you can bring your favorite Sprint phone over to Ting. If you've got an iPhone 4 or a 4S, bring it over. Check out the full list of eligible phones. Go to the special URL. Click on the BYOD link at the top of the page. You get all the info on that. They'll even help you turn your old device into cash to help you move over to Ting. And after you activate the device with Ting, you'll have the option to get a new phone number or use your existing one. They'll break out your rates by minutes, text messages, and megabytes of data. You will get billed at the end of the month for what you've used. And you can save some serious money. I got a Facebook message last week, in fact, totally unsolicited. One of my Facebook friends who got the Ham Nation deal here said, "You know, I'm saving $150 a month just by switching to Ting." That's real live actual savings. $150 a month they're saving. Here's how you can get in on it, too. Visit Ting at hamnation.ting.com. Hamnation.ting.com. You will save money. You will better manage your mobile phone usage, and Ting does that for you. Check out the savings calculator. You will see just exactly how much you or your company can save. You could save more than $150. Who knows? Just depends on how much you use it and what level of service you want. Again, it's hamnation.ting.com. Go there, check it out, and you will save money and be a happy camper like my Facebook friend is here, too. So let's head up now to Jackson, Mississippi, where it's still a little bit cold up there. We're 27 degrees now, so it's dropping, George. What's temperature up there by you? Of course, you've got all that soldering iron stuff over there. You're going to heat everything up, I know. So,
And I've been running those soldering irons overtime this week, Don. It has really been cold here. Yeah, I suspect, I don't know, it's probably around 25 or so out there right now, which is really cold, you know, for us down south there. Our infrastructure is not really set up to handle long periods of cold weather. And I think it's going to get down to 16 tonight. So that only happens every few years or even more than that, probably every decade. But right now, I want to continue with our discussion from last week on transmission lines.
Last week on Smoke and Solder, we talked about transmission lines, specifically coaxial cables. And that's what we'll continue with this week. Much of the information we're going to discuss today can be found in the 22nd edition of the ARRL Antenna Book. At RF frequencies, any conductor that has significant length when compared to the wavelength of the frequency will radiate power. So it's important to minimize radiation from transmission lines. Power lost in the resistance of transmission lines is largely unavoidable, but losses by radiation is. Any power radiated by the transmission line is power that won't be radiated by the antenna, and that power can radiate into areas where you don't want it, like your ham shack. Two conductors can be arranged so their electromagnetic fields are balanced, having equal and opposite fields from each other. And this causes the fields to cancel each other and radiation from the line is eliminated. That's the way that ladder line works. Matching the transmitter, transmission line, and antenna impedances is very important for the antenna to absorb all the power. When they're not matched, the antenna only absorbs part of the power. The remaining power is reflected back to the line toward the transmitter. This reflected power is not only wasted, but it can damage the transmitter and the transmission line. Reflected power also has a negative effect on the power handling ability of the line and causes additional transmission line losses. It's also important to point out that VSWR measurements on a very long transmission line may appear lower than they actually are due to line loss. Let's take a look now at some charts of cable attenuation. I looked around and I couldn't find one exactly like I wanted with all the cables that I would like to see on it, but here's some here from the ARRL antenna book. We'll take a look at a few common cables that you might consider. They don't show regular RG58 or RG58U on this chart, but they do have RG58A. If we look at it, we see that at 10 megahertz, it's approximately 1.6 dB of loss for 100 feet. We could live with that. As we go on up in frequency, though, let's approach 6 meters here. Around 50 megahertz, we're down 4 dB at 100 feet. And in the 2-meter range, we're over 6 dB down. That's totally unacceptable. The RG8 series of cables are not shown on this chart, but it does show RG213, which is a very similar cable. At 10 MHz, it's down 0.55 dB. That's plenty acceptable. When we step up to 50 MHz, we're down 1.7 dB. We can still live with that. When we get up in the 2-meter range, we're at 2.6 dB. Now, we could use that, but keep in mind that we're losing almost half our power before it arrives at the antenna. Next, let's take a look at a very popular cable. This is LMR400. It's a little more expensive, but it may be worth it. At 10 MHz, it's down about 0.39 dB, which would be excellent. At 50 MHz, 0.9 dB, which is still pretty good. Up in the 2-meter range, it's down 1.5 dB. Not too bad. And in the 440 band, it's about 2.8 dB. We could live with that, but we're still losing about half our power there. Now let's take a look at what I use on my VHF and UHF antenna systems. It's labeled here as half-inch hardline, but I'd call it half-inch heliax. Around 10 megahertz, it's about 2.4 dB down. Excellent. At 50 megahertz, it's less than 0.6 dB down. There again, excellent. In the 2-meter band, it's around 1 dB down, which is still excellent. And in the 440 band, it's about 2 dB down, which is acceptable. Now, keep in mind, we've been looking at a 100-foot length of cable. If your line is longer or shorter than that, then you can scale these measurements proportionally. Now, we've been talking about coax, but a lot of hams use ladder line on HF, so let's just take a look at why. At 10 megahertz, it's less than 0.1 dB of loss. In fact, it's so low it doesn't even show on this chart. At 50 megahertz, it's 0.2 dB, which is mondo excellent. And in the 2-meter band, it's 0.35 dB, although I've never seen anyone use ladder line on 2 meters. And at higher frequencies, it becomes impractical to make. So based on this chart, it should be a pretty simple matter to choose your transmission line. Well, let's throw a monkey wrench in here. Here's another chart from the ARRL antenna book, and it's showing 11 different varieties of RG8 cable. Let's take a look at a few of those. First up is Time Microwave's LMR400. It's listed as an RG8 cable, and I guess it is. There's a number of specs here that are shown. It's got an impedance of 50 ohms, a velocity factor of 85%, and that's how fast your signal will travel down the cable. The capacitance is 23.9 picofarads per foot.
The center conductor is 10-gauge solid CCA, and I'm not sure what that is. And the dielectric type is FPE. The shield type is FC. The jacket material is PE. It's got an outer diameter of 0.405, which all of these RG8 cables do. And the maximum RMS voltage is 600 volts. At 1 megahertz, it's showing 0.1 dB of loss at 100 feet. At 10 megahertz, it's 0.4 dB. At 100 megahertz, it's 1.3. And then the chart jumps way up to 1 gigahertz, where it's 4.1. So don't really know what it is around 440 megahertz there. The next one is Belden 9913, another extremely popular cable. And we'll just look at the loss on it. It's the same as LMR 400 at 1 megahertz, 0.1. It's the same at 10.4, and the same at 100 megahertz. Now, let's come on down to the Wireman CQ106 cable, and I believe that's the same as the Super 8 cable that I showed you last week. At 1 megahertz, 0.2 dB. At 10, it's 0.6. At 100 megahertz, it's 1.8 dB of loss at 100 feet. Finally, let's take a look at a lesser-grade RG8 here from Belden. It's 8237. It's 0.2 dB of loss at 1 megahertz. It's 0.6 at 10, and it's 1.9 at 100 megahertz. So it's almost the same as the Wireman's Super 8. On RG8X cables, we have six different varieties. Let's take a look at the Wireman's CQ118. It's got 0.3 dB of loss at 1 megahertz, 0.9 at 10, and 2.8 at 100. So you can see it's not quite as good as RG8 cable. Let's take a look at Belden 9258, which is another RG8X. It's got 0.3 dB loss at 1 megahertz, 0.9 at 10, and 3.2 at 100 megahertz. Now let's take a look at some RG58 cables. There's seven different varieties here. We'll look at a couple. The Wireman's CQ124 has 0.4 dB of loss at 1 megahertz, 1.3 at 10, and 4.3 at 100. And Belden's 8240, 0.3 at 1 megahertz, 1.1 at 10, and 3.8 at 100. So you can see why you wouldn't want to use RG58 in the higher frequencies. Now, there's only a couple of RG213s listed, so let's look at Belden 8267, 0.2 dB of loss at 1 MHz, 0.6 at 10, and 2.1 at 100 MHz. Now, there's one more chart I want to look at before we go, and that is approximate power handling capability, also from the ARRL antenna book. It's showing that RG58 at 1.8 MHz can handle 1,350 watts. At 7 megahertz, it can handle 700. At 14 megahertz, 500. At 30, 350 watts. At 50, 250 watts. At 150 megahertz, it can handle 150 watts. At 220, it can handle 120. And at 450, it can handle 100. So you can see that's a wide variation there, all the way from 1350 in the 160 meter band, but only 100 watts in the 450 megahertz band. Let's look at RG8X. It can handle 1,830 in the 160 meter band. In the 40 meter band, it can handle 840 and only 80 at 450. So that's a little bit different there. You can see it'll handle more power than the 58 can at 160 meters, but it handles less at 450. And looking at RG8 and RG213, it can handle almost 6,000 watts at 160 meters, and it can handle 350 watts at 450 megahertz. Now, all these readings were taken with a 1-to-1 SWR, and I assume these were probably taken with continuous power in mind. With signals like CW and single sideband, your power ratings will probably exceed what's listed here easily. That's all the time we've got to talk about transmission line today. I hope you see how important it is to pay attention to the specs when choosing one for your application. And I learned a little bit myself going over those charts there. I didn't realize that there was such a variation in some of those cables, like some of the varieties of RG8. So you want to take a look at your transmission lines before you purchase some. You know, it's the copper's not getting any cheaper. And you don't want to use RG58 on UHF, and you certainly don't want to use it with an amplifier.
So take a few minutes, do some searching on the internet, and find out what the specs are. And do consider the length of line that you're going to run. You can get by with the loss of your cable on shorter runs, but on long ones, you want to shy away from that. Well, last week I asked a question, and if I can find it here, it's yeah, here it is. Many coaxial cables have the prefix RG. What does RG stand for? And I had an answer from Alan N1TBN, and he said RG stands for radio guide. So congratulations, Alan. We're going to send you this copy of the Howell Ham Radio Handbook, a great book that Bob just reissued here recently, and I know you're going to really enjoy that one. You should pick up a copy. Ask your favorite ham radio dealer about that one. And for next week, we're going to give away another book. This is going to be Antennas and Transmission Lines from MFJ, a great book. It's kind of middle of the road. It's not super math heavy, but it's not dumbed down either. It gives you a lot of good information in there. If you'd like to win that, then answer this question. Is coax considered balanced or unbalanced transmission line? So send your answer to me at hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could be next week's lucky winner. And right now, let's get a message from ICOM and see what's going on up there.
Some great D-Star radios have entered the market in the last year, but let's not forget all the solid analog radios out there. From radios strictly on 2 meters to dual banders with analog capability, ICOM has your complete analog solutions this fall. Check out ICOM's compact military rugged 2-meter IC23H mobile, 65 watts of stable output. Oversized tuning dial is easy to use. It's got 4.5 watts of loud audio and 270 memory channels and multiple scan options. Consider the ICV8000 for your next mobile adventure on 2 meters, 75 watts of output power, a rugged die-cast aluminum chassis, and fast memory scanning with dynamic memory scan. ICOM's IC7000 is an all-mode HF, VHF, UHF mobile. It's a compact radio with a colorful high-res display, dedicated interface keys, and great tuning knob, built-in DSP noise reduction and filtering, and it's popular for de-expeditions and field days as well. Looking for rugged, easy-to-use handhelds with plenty of memory channels, loud audio, and long-lasting battery life? The ICV80 and the V80HD is a 2-meter handheld with 5.5 watts of high power. A built-in BTL amplifier helps deliver 750 milliwatts of loud audio. It's great for noisy environments. There's 207 memory channels, and the HD version includes radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and a rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. The ICT70AHD is a dual-band transceiver for classic operation on 2 meters and 70 centimeters. Like the V80HD, this version includes the radio, lithium-ion battery pack, and the rapid charger for up to 19 hours of operation. It's easy to program with a simple keypad, large backlit alphanumeric display, and it has 700 milliwatts of loud and clear audio, 302 memory channels, and fast scanning features. Why not take a look today? Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur for more information on ICOM's analog ham radio selection.
And you can win. You can win some swag from the ICOMSwagStore.com. After each episode of Ham Nation, go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation and register to win. The January grand prize is going to be given away here in just a day or so, and that's the ICOM IC2300H. It's a rugged 2-meter transceiver with 65 watts of stable output, 4.5 watts of loud audio, built-in weather alert function, and it meets the MIL standard 810G specification. And just to give you a little heads up, in February, ICOM is going to be giving away an IC80AD. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/hamnation after the show tonight and throw your name into the hat. And now let's go up north to Cheryl, where I know it's got to be a little bit colder than it is here, for our chat room segment. Cheryl?
Hi, George. How are you? You know what? It's probably very cold for you down there. I'm not sure how cold, but we have a pretty bad time up here, just starting to get over the zero marker for today. Tell me one thing before I go on. How is it down there for you guys?
It is extremely cold for us. We're not used to this. I've had plants here. I've got a little Sega palm out there that it stays green all year around, but this year it died. It got so cold. It's I'm gonna guess it's probably about 25 here right now.
26 down here right now.
You know what? That would be almost beach weather for us, considering. But for you guys, I'm sure by comparison that it's really not so nice. But thanks for sharing. And hello to you too, Don, out there. Looking good in green.
Thank you. It's my favorite color. My favorite color.
Very nice. Very good. There you go. Looks like you are nice and sprucey. I like that color. We need more green for this kind of weather. So anyhow, let's look into the chat room and see what we've got going on here. Hi to everybody. I just want to say that first off. But, you know, there was a nice general question. And, Don, I don't get to give you too many questions. And this one, I really just wanted to see if you know your history. So put on your history cap, and this one's coming your way.
Oh,
this person in the chat room called MacBook Oxygen says, why is it called ham? Can you shed some light on that?
I can, as a matter of fact. It all started, you know, the radio experimentation started out a long, long, long time ago. There was no sideband or anything. It was all Morse code, and it was all done with spark gap. But it started even way before that with the old telegraph done over wires. And someone who sent really, really poor Morse code was said to be ham-fisted. You sent code with a ham fist. And it kind of became a term of endearment. And the amateur radio operators, because it all started with Morse code, we kind of adopted the term ham-fisted, and we became hams. That's how amateur radio operators became hams. That's the legend. I mean, no one can prove that, but that's kind of what I've heard for ever and a day.
You know what? I think you got that one right. Also, I think if you look at the fist, if you were to do the fisting of, you know, doing the keir, and it looks like a ham. I think I've read that somewhere that the hand looks like a little bit of a ham or something.
Yep.
That might be part of it as well. Go ahead, Don.
Oh, that's it. Yeah, pretty. You're absolutely right.
Okay, very good. Then we're on the same page, anyhow. So that settles that one. And another one that we've got here, I just wanted to welcome Mr. El Gordo back into the arena here with us tonight. It's good to have you. And what a great, great Quartz Fest coverage that you've done. So I didn't want to leave you out in the cold, Gordo. So here's the El Gordo question for tonight. It's from my email bag, of course. Can you please detail the differences between ham amateur radio and marine amateur radio? Over to you, Gordo.
Okay. Well, let's go sailing. Oh, no. Let's go ice fishing, Cheryl. This is a marine radio, and marine radios are on authorized marine channels at 2, 4, 6, 8, 12, 16, 22, and higher frequencies. The ham, of course, are in bands. So the marine radio can also do ham band. And here we are on 14285. This is an ICOM M802 marine radio that by dialing around and pushing one button, you can turn it into a VFO scanning ham radio. And now I can, instead of going just around the channels, I can dial up and dial down the band. So marine band is for mariners that don't have a ham license. By the way, the word ham had a lot of money. Okay. And ham set, of course, are for those that have passed the exam. So marine band, they need to have a ship station license, no test, good for 10 years. And no aboard test. A ship, they can operate marine single sideband, the same emission that us hams use on the ham bands. There you go, Cheryl. Stay warm.
What a great job. It looks like you're doing a little bit of a mock-up there with the hat in California. I can't hardly believe you'd need that out there. But, Gordo, you're always in there with the different things going on. That looks great. Thanks for participating in our super cold, what they call it, what's worse than a Alberta Clipper? It's, of course, a polar vortex. That's what pretty much we've had here. So thanks for participating there. I appreciate that. Now, there is another one, a question that's pretty decent, and it's kind of technical, so I think I'm going to pass it to you, George. So this one comes from KC5CW, and he says he makes his own wire antennas. He says, how do I calculate the max power the wire coax can safely transmit. He works with ARP, and I had to really put my hat on and talk with David about exactly what that meant, and he came up with amateur radio public service is what we're thinking. He works with ARP a lot and might use those light antennas with his 100-watt radio, and he doesn't want to exceed any safety rating. So there again, the question is, how does he calculate the max power the wire/coax can safely transmit? Over to you, George.
Oh, good question. And one, as often, I don't have the answer for. I would say you would calculate it by using the ARRL antenna book or doing some searching on Google. 100 watts, you know, it's going to depend on the length of the antenna, too, because the current's going to vary up and down the antenna at different points. So I would hate to try to give a definitive answer on there. I would just say do a little Google searching, refer to some material, and you can probably come up with a reasonable answer on that.
I would also think that the larger diameter of the wire, the more power it's going to be able to handle as well. You don't want something up there that's the diameter of, say, sewing thread. It's not going to, it's going to burn out pretty quick. So,
oh yeah, definitely.
But with 100 watts is not that much, so it shouldn't be an issue.
Yeah, it depends a lot on the antenna design, doesn't it, Gordon?
Yep, I agree. And there's one good thing. The colder the weather, the lower the resistance of the copper conductor. So in very cold weather, you're good to jam some good signal in at Cheryl.
Wow, I would not have really thought about that cold weather factor. They should really mention that a lot, because especially in the northern hemisphere, you know, up my way, it's something you got to take into consideration a lot. And I thought it was really interesting about that 60-meter band when Don was doing the Bill Pasternak story on the Canadians with the 60-meter. Boy, that sounds real interesting. I was amazed to hear. It's always something new going on and great to hear that sort of thing.
We're going to have more 60-meter news next week, too, in Amateur Radio Newsline. Another country coming on board. Your little tease for you.
Okay, we'll look forward to that one then, too, Don. Great. Now, I have Ed, VK2JI. He wanted me to just quickly go over this announcement for the largest ham fest in the Southern Hemisphere. And he says this one's at Wyong in New South Wales, Australia. And that would take place on February 23rd in Wyong, New South Wales, Australia. He has the ICOM Australia is actually attending this year, as well as the other normal attractions. So there you go. ICOM's all around the world. It's just a great thing. So he did want me to bring that up, and I said I would. So there you have that. And I wanted to make sure that, you know, a lot of times we miss the frequencies. They're not always announced during the show. So I really want to go over it. Of course, there's the after-show QSO with me, a 75 meters, 3.847 megahertz tonight. It looks like it's going to be a little bit open, so I might be able to get a bunch of you guys in. And the 40-meter, I think that's 7.268, and the 20-meter is 14.268, and we have the D-Star reflector at 14C or 14 Charlie or reflector 030C Charlie. Sometimes they do it on that one, too. So correct me if I'm wrong, gentlemen, but I think that's pretty much all that I have for this Wednesday evening. So please join us next Wednesday night, and until the next time, I'm Cheryl Lassick, K9BIK, 73, y'all. I'll see you right here. On Ham Nation. Bye.
And let's not forget Echolink on Star Do Drop In Star, the conference server. God, I can't talk tonight. So, to you folks.
Thanks,
on Echo.
Don. Thank you very
much. Thank you, Cheryl. Good stuff. Good stuff tonight. George, anything? We're about to got to the end of our string here. George, anything more from you up there?
Do Drop In conference server. If you're connecting with a repeater, then you can use your DMF pad and or DTMF pad and dial in 355-800, and you can reach it there. Well, that's it, Don. I'm going to try to stay warm. I think it's going to be warming up this weekend, and we got rain coming back in. But looking forward to seeing everyone next week. I don't know if Bob's going to be with us. If not, have you heard?
I've heard, and Bob says probably not. He's got one more gig that he and Sarah will be doing, so maybe not next week. And I think we're on 72-78 tonight, but tune around, little high, little low, and that's where you'll find us on 40. Back to you.
There you go. Yeah, we'll keep the chair warm for him, no matter no matter when he comes back. It's a busy time of the year for him coming around here. So very good. Well, I think that'll pretty much tie a ribbon on it. Dan Van Evenhoven, thank you so much for sitting in for Dale tonight. Gordon, of course, we couldn't do it without you. And George, we couldn't do it without you. And Smoke and Solder. And Cheryl, thank you so much, too. And that'll do it for us tonight, I guess, from chilly South Mississippi, 26 degrees. I've heard that Interstate 10 is now open. You know, we've got a bunch of bridges down here. That's, you know, that's part of our problem with wintertime down here around New Orleans is we're surrounded by water, and those bridges, they freeze up really, really fast. But I hear that it's all open now, or for the most part. I think the causeway across Lake Pontchartrain is still shut down, but it should all be open tomorrow. We're supposed to be up around 50 tomorrow, and again, like we said, 70 by the weekend, and maybe some rain and fog. So the meteorological roller coaster continues, and wherever you are, we hope you have great propagation. We hope you have great terrestrial weather and great soul well for your ham radio stuff. So we'll say goodnight from South Mississippi, and for everybody else here at Ham Nation, goodnight, and thank you so much for watching, and we'll catch you all on the After Show Nets. Goodnight.
73.